We have a gospel or a reading today from Colossians about the gospel, and it's important in this sense. Our theme for the month of May has been the word remember. And we started the month, first Sunday, with a word study on remember. And if you remember, there were two pieces to the word remember. One is the mental calling something to recollection. That's remember, which is what we all have a hard time doing anymore. And it gets worse, not better, I'm finding. And the other one, to remember, is to act on my behalf. When Jesus was asked of the guy on the cross, would you remember me when you come into your kingdom? He was asking him to mentally recall that they were there together. But Jesus' response to him was more than that. I will act on your behalf. I will remember you. And there are times when action on our behalf is what we need in the word remember. Paul's words in Colossians were to remind us who he is, who it is that we serve, and what this gospel is that has been entrusted to us. And we are to remember we have a responsibility. The responsibility is not to show up in church on Sunday morning, sing a couple of songs, laugh a time or two, and go home. That's not it. Our responsibility is to live the gospel. Every moment of every hour of every day, we are the representative of Christ, wherever we are, whatever we're doing. We live it, we breathe it, it's who we are, it's DNA. That's what it means to be a believer and a Christian. Dan's grandson, Roddy Cole, which way was it? Cole Roddy, I said it right the first time. He and I were comparing bracelets today. I still wear mine, guys, every day, and I'm still getting people talking to me about it. I love it. So if you're wearing them, that's a good thing. I don't know if you've gotten the response I have, but people don't expect people in their 50s to be... to be wearing these. And it's a conversation piece. It works. Point being is it opens the door to share Jesus. What's that bracelet about? What are you wearing that for? And it opens the door, and that's what our responsibility is. Today we have with us two very, very dear friends. Some of you have met them previously when they were here. For some of you, this will be the first time to meet the Vanns, V-A-N-N. Joylene's going to do proper introduction. She and Sally literally go back to high school. Joel and I met on the set of the James Robinson TV program, which at that particular moment, he was the producer for that night. He had other responsibilities at the ministry, but that night you were telling me where to sit and what to do. And that's where we first crossed paths. But we have become very, very, very fast friends, and their ministry is something exquisite. Joylene?
Well, I just a minute. First of all, I have to do a correction. Sorry.
Of course. You're home. How many of you are surprised by that?
I was 9 years old, and Sally was 13. We moved to Mbeya, Tanzania, East Africa. Sally and her family, Uncle Paul and Helen, they lived in Arusha. And so that's when we first met. But I could go to the schools. There was a British school in the little town that we were in Mbeya. And so for 2 years, I went to that school for fifth and sixth grade. What came time for seventh grade, there were no higher education facilities there. And so I was going to be going 1,000 miles away to Rift Valley Academy, just outside of Nairobi, Kenya. Well, Sally told me all about it. Bubbly and bouncing, lovely Sally. And when I went, you know, everything being, I'm away from my parents, and this school was grade 1 through 12, and here were these little, as we called them, titchies, away from their parents, and so difficult. And we older ones would feel sorry for ourselves and then look at the little ones. But Sally became my big sister, And she just took me in. She was involved in everything at school. She was the most popular. She was in all the trios and choirs. And so here I was in seventh grade, running around with the upperclassmen and feeling so loved and such a part. And she always was so special, special to my heart. And then to be able to reconnect in these years back here in the States. And so Duane said I couldn't take 15 minutes. I can take an hour. But I love you, Sally. You're special in my heart. One wonderful thing, her daddy, Uncle Paul, was in an Alzheimer's unit the later years of his life. And we had just reconnected through Sally's mom and Helen, who had run into my mom. Anyway, I was able to go up to Dallas, and we went and took Uncle Paul for an ice cream cone. And he, in that moment, I think he remembered who I was. So they just are a special, special family, and always will be to our hearts. So Sally and Joel, of course, I'm very glad to have been able to meet you, get acquainted, love you, and you're a brother. So there you go.
Good. I thought she would tell about the time. Come. About the time that she spent the night with you, and the next morning your mom was making pancakes, and she was just a little short on materials, and so she was going to have one that was going to be bigger than the other. And she said to the two of you, well, you know, Jesus would give the big one to the other person. And Joylene looked at you and said, you be Jesus.
That was the way it was. Here.
You want to lean? So Joel and Sally Van now have a ministry called African Moons. And they are in Arusha and in Tanzania. And the purpose is a school to train ministry. That's what they do. That's where the heart is. That's what the heritage has been. The goal of that school, the mission of that school has never changed. It has been the same. When did it start? When did
1958
is what I thought, but I thought I could have been wrong. I'll let you have it. I've got one. But where did the name, and this is going to be fun. I'm going to continue to talk to Joel and watch. His lips won't even move. It's wonderful how this is.
I think some of the men can understand that.
Where did the name African Moons come from? The name of your ministry.
I'm going to let Sally tell this.
Mom and Dad went to Africa, Nigeria, West Africa, when I was 4 years old. That was 1948, so now you know how old I am. And that first year was such an adjustment. My dad was home the minute he touched the soil of Africa, because at the age of six, God told him as a child that he would be a missionary to Africa. Well, it was a little different for Mother. She had agreed that wherever he went, she would go. And that first year, we lived in a mud house that had been built by the Germans in World War I. The mud walls were this thick. Mother had to adjust, make home. We were miles from any other missionaries, and Dad got a horse and immediately went to the bush. He was out and doing, and Mother was left alone, pregnant with my second brother. My oldest brother went to boarding school, and I was bored. And it took all of her energy to try to keep me. I had no playmates or anything. No technology was even on the horizon then. We were out there. One night, Mother told the story, and she told it till she passed away about 10 years ago. She and God came to terms, but it wasn't easy. She struggled, and she poured her heart out to God that night. And she said, how am I going to make this, God? How am I going to get through 3 years? Because the terms were 3 years then. And they talked back and forth, and her loneliness, her grief, the adjustments, She had had everything at the parsonage in Delano, California. Now she didn't even have a washing machine or running water, or we had an outhouse. After several hours, she told the story that all of a sudden a peace came in her heart. And she said, okay, God, I can do this. But she said, where am I going to get my inspiration? And that still small voice spoke to her, and he said, because I am your inspiration. The moon was coming up, and she looked at that African moon, and she thought, 3 years, 36 moons to go.
African moons.
African moons.
Wow.
Joel and I had careers. We supported them, helped them in their retirement years. They had not had a lot of planning. And then out of the blue, in 2008, we were invited to go to the 50th anniversary of the Bible College Dad built, and then Uncle Norm and Aunt Norma, they came after us. Right. So our hearts go into this training center back to when we were teenagers. We saw it built. They invested a lot, Uncle Norm, all of us, into that. And Mom and Dad lived on the continent around 30 years. Right. And so 10 years ago, out of the blue, God lets us go back, and we had no construction experience. We didn't know anything. But African Moons was birthed, and a new dorm. The first dorm is built because the students had no real accommodations. And so God took us in our retirement years, and here we are, African Moons.
Understand, God took us in our retirement years, and look what we got.
Yeah. And aren't you blessed? Looking at all of you, I just want to say I feel such warmth, such love. You know Jesus, you know Christ, and that is one holy race. Mm. Thank you for that song, Joseph.
Absolutely.
It means a lot.
There is an underlying theme. In Colossians, we have a responsibility for the gospel. Obviously, you have a piece of it that has become very close to you and in which you have invested now your lives. Tell me what you're doing, Joel. Tell me today, what does the Bible school look like? What comes out of there? Do you have any idea how many people have been trained in that school since 1958?
Say an average of 30 to 50 people for 60 years, or 60... 5 years coming up.
So 3,000 plus in indigent ministry that takes place locally, pastors trained because of the school, and still going on.
Well, there are students that come from all over Tanzania, and so many of them, the simplicity of their faith and their commitment to God. And though they come with virtually nothing, when we first went in 08, and I walked through what they were using as a dormitory, looked like an old worn out horse stables. They had the shuttered openings, there were no glass or anything like that. One single light bulb hung in the room that was probably like about maybe 8 by 8, and there were two bunk beds in each room, and these were grown adults, you know, young people that were sleeping in these conditions, and they would just hang their, you know, whatever clothes they had on a nail. I mean, they were so. When they come to the Arusha Bible College, they're coming because they are totally committed. And after a little while, if they end up leaving, it's because they couldn't handle it. They are put to work in the garden. They grow as much of their own fruits and vegetables as they can. And they are assigned responsibilities on the campus to keep it up. But then you meet them individually, and some of them were successful in business. Some of them were teachers. Some of them are just coming up through their local church, and they want to become a music pastor, a music minister. They want to have their own CDs and such. And then there's those that will take that calling and graduate from there and go out into some little village area with no support, just so needy. But they love God, and they get out there, and they preach the word, and they go house to house. They start visiting the people in the village. They start praying for people that are sick, and they begin to just demonstrate the gospel. And they build that little church up. So this has gone on since 1958, where that Bible school has just every year graduated like 40 to 50 students. And those students, some of them go on, whether we've been able to help scholarship, they'll go on and get their BAs at a higher level school. So the Bible College is sort of like in our world, it'd be sort of like a junior college type thing, but for getting them the foundation. So the Bible school then generates those young people and those men and women that go out and become pastors, teachers, singers, whatever God has called them to do.
Talk about curriculum for just a minute. Being that it's a beginning, and being that some of the folks who come there are coming from what we understand in missions language as the bush, where there isn't anything, where do you start with them?
They basically have, the school has its own curriculum of Bible, book by book. They'll teach them, English. They'll teach them computer skills. They'll give them, they'll take the Gospel of John and just go through that. They'll teach them how to prepare a sermon, how to study, how to organize the church, how to operate and manage a church. Sorry?
What? Basic homiletics.
Yes, homiletics.
Yeah. the point being is you're able to take someone who has sensed a call and give them fundamentals.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You're not trying to do advanced degrees.
Right.
You're trying to give them fundamentals. That's important, gang, for this reason. When they leave and they go back out and quickly go into ministry, they know the word enough to lead someone to Christ and give them basics, but they're very dependent upon the Holy Spirit to do the work. And at the end of the day, gang, I don't care how educated we might be, unless God brings his word alive in your heart and in the hearts of the hearers, I don't care how eloquent the preacher, makes no difference. No, there's no life without the Spirit of God. And that's one of the things that's taught.
Absolutely.
It's intentional. Yes?
Right.
Oh, yes.
Right.
Yes.
So for those of you that were here when we were here a couple of years ago, maybe the rest of you.
You're fine.
It's.
Yeah.
I grew up in California in a small little Spanish-speaking church, and that's all I knew. You know, most Hispanic families, they stay pretty much together and, you know, in the neighborhood kind of thing. I was the oldest son, and for whatever reason, God just took me out of that, or led me out away from my family and into ministry. And when Sally and I got married, her mom and dad were working in Kenya. And we went out there as young people and worked alongside them. Whatever he told me to do, that's what I did, as you can imagine. So
you were the apprentice.
Yeah. And so, you know, we spent those years together. And that, for me, was a fundamental foundation for what God was doing in my life. And, you know, one thing that you just said, that just, I had looked at this last night, This is like me, this from the message from Paul in 1 Corinthians. He says, I was unsure how to go about this and felt totally inadequate. I was scared to death, if you want the truth of it, and so nothing I said could have impressed you or anyone else. But the message came through anyway. God's Spirit and God's power did it. And, you know, for me, it was like Paul Bruton was the ultimate missionary. And I married into this family, and as you know, the dynamics of this and of our relationship are always interesting. And
we're like Desi and Lucy.
So, I was a redhead.
So it's always, you know, that was the challenge, and doing and following, you know, Paul Bruton around and doing whatever he told me to do and learning from that was just a real instrumental in my whole life. And it's like, you know, called by his name, Joseph, you know, it's like I had no choice. Like, we've sat at the table at different times with different decisions that we had to make and asked ourselves the question, what would we feel like if we don't do this? And it was always, we have no choice. This is what God's called us to do. This is what we have to do. And when God put it in our hearts to start African Moons, and then we saw the Bible school and how it had deteriorated and the conditions of it, we said, you know, God, we've got to do something. And that's what then prompted us and pushed us to that first dorm.
One of the things you said, Joel is the Hispanic that married into the missionary family. I'm the German that married into the missionary family. You had Paul Bruton and I had Norm Correll, but they were the same.
Yes.
and everything changes because of that. Here's why I have folks like Joel and Sally come share with us their life. We have an opportunity to partner in ministry. Now, with respect, I love you all. You're too old to go and become missionaries. It ain't happening. But we have folks who are on the ground, and we can stand behind, and we can pray for them, and we can know what's going on. And we have an outreach team, and I've had you be signing up for it to stay in touch with them and know what's going on and where their needs are. And how do we support? And I don't just mean writing a check here and there. That's part of it, of course. But I'm talking about being involved, bringing a report to us of what's going on in the ministry. Where do they need us? And we literally become partners and have ministry around the world. We've got Scott and McCall in Marseille that we partner with, and we know what's going on in their lives, and we will know what's going on in their lives. And that makes us as a family, part of our family, is representing us, and 3,000 plus in ministry. How would you like 60 years from now for your legacy to be that at least 3,000 people are in ministry because you were able to partner up? That's part of a legacy I would like for Pinnacle Church to have. And as pastor, that's why I present these things to you for our consideration and for our thoughts. Is not just because they're buddies, they happen to be, but because the ministry that they're doing is valid. When you're educating young people and equipping them with the skills for life and for ministry, that's valid. And that is worthy of our consideration. That's why they're here. That's it. So tell me what the project is right now. What's going on?
Well, right now, the Arusha Bible College is waiting for us to build a second dormitory. They have students that want to come. They're still, unfortunately, students that are having to live in that old dorm that we want to tear down and build this new one that's on the posters. So it's a three-story dorm that'll sleep 240 students. It'll include all the bathroom facilities,
showers.
How
many students now?
Sorry?
How many students now at Arusha Bible College?
About 130.
Yeah.
And this will add another 200 and change. 240.
Right. Once it all gets occupied, it'll house.
Talk
all
about
of that.
The builder. Where did he come from?
The Who? Builder.
No, you don't have to.
I do. Just to show you the that God is humorous. When Joel is the pragmatist, I'm the one said, "Oh, let's do this," and he goes, "Uh-uh." He told me when we went to the 50th graduation, we're supposed to build a dormitory. And I looked at him like he had four horns. First of all, that is totally out of character for Joel Vann. He lives within an Excel spreadsheet. Truly.
I believe it.
Well, I knew this must be God. So we made the final decision at our breakfast table. Are we going to do this, Lord? And I said, well, what are we going to feel like if we don't? We prayed, and we said, okay, and we knew we were rolling. And now we're going to build a dormitory. And I looked out at our deck, and there was a birdhouse that Joel and one of our grandsons built. And it basically, Joel has never built anything. And that birdhouse still stands there today. And it is nothing matches, nothing's even. And I said, and we're going to build a dorm? Well, out of the blue, a gentleman called us, and he is the architect and designer for all the luxury suites of the NBA and NFL big stadiums. And he goes to our church, and he said, I don't want to do this, but God's told me I'm supposed to help you build this dorm. So he has donated all of the design, the expertise, and been the project manager, and we came out on budget. And he is a very important man, and God had him in the wings. All he wanted is to say we would.
That's it. We don't know what, when we make an investment, we don't know what God's already been working on the other side. We don't know what God's already been preparing. And when this gentleman stepped up, his credentials are way past building a dorm in Arusha, Tanzania. But that's who God brought to the table. And it's going to be interesting to see who God brings to the table as this moves forward.
Dwayne, I just want to share as quick as I can one little part of our history. When you talk about remembrance, Sally's dad, when we were out there, he would go out and do pastor seminars in remote areas and give an opportunity for pastors, for leaders, people that just wanted to know and study the word and take the word back to their villages, and they didn't really have training. And he would go out there in these areas, and he would hold these seminars. And during the course of the seminar, he would do a little Bible drill to see how much they knew and how well they knew their Bibles. And so he would call out a verse, and this old man would just stand up, jump up in the back, and he would have, you know, I've got the scripture. He would, in Swahili, he would say, I have it. And so then he'd read it, and then he'd do that over and over. And every time, this old man was the first one to jump up and knew exactly where that verse was. And so Sally's dad called him to the front and said, Wana, how do you know this Bible so well? And he reached down and he picked up his Bible.
Wow.
And he said, I have read this many times.
Wow.
And Sally's dad held this Bible and the tears running down his cheeks. And he said, would you like to have a new Bible? And the old man looked at him and said, Buona, is it possible for a man to have more than one Bible in a lifetime?
Yeah.
And that word is what is revolutionizing men and you and me, men and women there.
Yep.
And it's this same word that is getting preached through those students. And it's the only hope that we have.
That's it.
Is in God's word.
Amen. Joel, that's excellent. Wow. Well, does yours look like that? Let's go to work on that, okay? Let's see if we can use them up. Thank you for that. That story, not exactly, but that story, dad, mom, head stories like it. Once you have been to a mission field, once you have seen what God does in worlds like that, once you have invested yourself in something like that, your whole worldview changes. Everything about you changes. Everything that is priority changes. And the only thing you want to do is to invest in His kingdom to see the returns that only God can bring. I'm excited about Pinnacle Church because it has taken us a little while to get ourselves to a point of being organized where we can actually do some things that we want to do and we're ready to do and poised to do, and now we have opportunities to do. That's exciting for me as pastor to see those things begin to happen with us. We are so blessed, gang, and we are so spoiled, and you know it. We have anything we want, whenever we want it. We push a button, we make a phone call. The kids asked us last Christmas, what do you want for Christmas? And we said you, because we got stuff. There's no stuff. If we want stuff, we go get it. Whatever it is, we're all like that. But here's an investment. Here are things we can do. What's it cost to build a dorm?
The budget for construction is $350,000, which William Jeter says if he bid it out, it would be like four times that amount. But he will act as the contractor and hire the subs out there.
And how long does it take to build it?
If we had all the funds all together, it would be up and going within a year, it'd be finished.
6 months.
Okay, so a year from now. All right, here's what I'm going to ask of us. Thank you. Here's what I'm going to ask of us. I'm going to ask that we make it a matter of prayer. I don't know that we're going to be able to finance the whole dorm. I'm not asking that of you. On the other hand, we might. You never know. But I am asking you to do this. I'm asking you to go home and ask God, can I get involved in that? Do I have a little excess that I can give, that I can put in there? When you write on the envelope and you put your offering back there, which you know I always praise you because I don't have to talk about budget very much, and I am so grateful to you for that. But on that envelope, there's a place for missions. And Arusha is spelled A-R-U-S-H-A. It's a whole lot easier than Tanzania. So just put Arusha on the envelope, and whatever you'd like to add to it as we go along, and we'll just collect some funds, and we'll partner up with Joel and Sally and with African Moons, and we will provide some funding for that dorm, and we want to see some returns.
Would you like to know how much we've raised so far?
No. Because if we were able to do enough, we'll use that for something else.
All right.
Well,
okay.
Furnishings will be about 60.
See, there it is. So my point being is I'm not concerned about the amount of money. That part, if you'd have told me $4 million, it doesn't matter to me. Because God's able to provide anything we need. You believe that? I really believe that. I mean, I truly believe God provide whatever we need. The only thing we do is we go to him and ask him, what do you want from us? What do you need from me? What role do I have in all of this? Where's mine? And guys, we will do it together as a family. We're not going to do it as individuals. We're going to do it together as a family through the church to partner with Ministry of Ministry. Remember, part of remember is to act on somebody's behalf. So I'm asking you to act on behalf of all of those students who need to be trained in the Word of God and all of those folks in Africa and Tanzania who have never heard the name Jesus. And we have a responsibility to tell them who he is. Colossians all spins around it. We have a responsibility for it. Don't forget it. Remember. Stand with me, would you please?